This is How Hacks Happen, and today we're going to talk about NFTs. How they work, what they are, how they kind of relate to physical items like art, and also some of the fraud that goes on around them. So there's this artist I really like named Joey Mars. Joey makes this kind of psychedelic art with these alien cartoon creatures and puts them in this crazy world. I own a few pieces of Joey's art myself, including an original painting of a crazy alien cat, and I love this painting. It puts a smile on my face every time I look at it. I've also bought a few of Joey's postcards of other paintings he's done. Now those I bought largely to show support to an artist that I believe in. Now he's not as famous as other psychedelic artists like Salvador Dali or Jean-Michel Basquiat, but there's always a chance that Joey's artwork will take off. If it was suddenly worth $5 million, I would not complain. And another reason someone might want to own art is pride of ownership. Three reasons. Support, investment, or pride are exactly the reasons why people buy NFTs. So what is an NFT? Well, let's start with the name. NFT stands for non-fungible token. So what is that? We'll start with the middle part, fungible. Fungible means the thing is interchangeable with something else. For example, the classic example is a $1 bill. Any $1 bill is interchangeable with another $1 bill and will still serve the same purpose. In the digital world, fungible refers to files, like copies of files. Like, let's say you have a photo you took with your camera and you saved it as a JPEG on your computer. Then you make a copy of the JPEG, and because the JPEG is digital, it's not like a photocopy of a photocopy, it's exactly the same. Now, the metadata might be different, for example, like the date created or date saved or whatever, and that's saved along with the file. That can be different, but the image itself will be exactly the same. So in this way, a JPEG image is fungible, meaning it can be replaced with a copy of itself. Now, suppose you want to distinguish between the original JPEG file that came out of your camera and any copies you made of it. You can assign a token to the original JPEG. This is a sort of a digital serial number. I know you might be like, why would you do that and how would you do that? But just bear with me here. So now you have this token assigned to the original JPEG. Basically, the token is a long string of numbers. And then you encrypt the token, and you are the only one who has access to the decryption key, so you're the only one who can get at the token. So you possess the token, and your possession of it and your ability to decrypt it says to the world that you own the original JPEG file.
This is mine.
And you've got some pride of ownership there, and you should stop and enjoy that. Now, suppose you're done enjoying the photo and you want to make some money off of it. What if you could make money just from selling the token? You just need to find somebody who thinks that ownership of the original JPEG is worth it. So let's look at this in terms of art. Now maybe somebody will buy the token to show you they support you, and they want to help you keep making a living as a photographer. So instead of donating $100 to your Patreon or something, they'll buy your token for $100 and they get a little something out of it. Or maybe they'll think of it as an investment because they think they'll be able to sell the token at some later date for more money. Or maybe they just want to tell people they own it and feel that pride of ownership.
This is mine.
And this doesn't just apply to photos. The digital file could be music or videos or just a piece of ownership in a song, or it can be anything. But who would buy such a thing? Well, lots of people, as it turns out. This actually happened. Remember the Disaster Girl meme where there's this little girl smirking at the camera while there's this fire raging behind her, this house is burning down? Well, the star of the photo, her name is Zoe Roth, and she was 4 years old when her father took the picture in 2005. He submitted it to a photo contest. He won. It made its way to the internet. And now it's been copied and altered and shared like I don't know how many thousands of times. It's everywhere. So in 2021, Zoe, who then owned the rights to it, she sold an NFT of the original photo for nearly $500,000. And she used that money to pay for her college education. So good for her. You might have also heard about this other series of NFTs called Bored Ape. And they're like these cartoon drawings of this funky ape. So there was this huge craze for Bored Ape NFTs. The celebrities like Justin Bieber, he dropped like over $1 million on this one Bored Ape NFT, and he bought another one for, I think it was $470,000 or something. But now, in 2024, the value of these Bored Ape NFTs is just dropped. So what was the deal with these crazy prices for cartoon drawings of apes? Well, it was kind of a snowball effect. There were people that picked up a Bored Ape NFT for a couple $100s, and then the next day they were able to sell it for thousands. And then that buyer turned around and he sold it for more thousands. And it just kind of went on like this. And people looked at the way the prices were going up, one sale after another, and they just went berserk. The ones who bought at the top prices, they thought it would keep going on forever, keep going higher and higher, or at least stay high, but it hasn't. Now, maybe the market will perk up again. I don't know, but right now, if you want a Bored Ape NFT, you can pick one up for a measly $60,000. But, you know, if this just sounds like some new way for rich people to spend their money, you know, you might have something there. But, you know, the NFT craze, it swept up a lot of people from every income level, not just people with lots of money. And on top of that, it's opened the door to a new kind of fraud. Oh, just what we need. More internet fraud. I'll talk about that some more later. But for now, let's talk about the good side of NFTs. They can be a good way for an artist to raise money and get support. In fact, this was one of the main benefits that when the NFT market was opening up, a lot of people were talking about how great this would be. And I have seen and heard of artists who did this. They started selling tokens for original digital art as an alternative to, like, you know, printing posters and t-shirts and stuff like that, or just asking for donations outright. It was a nice way for them to, you know, ask for a donation and you get something in return that you can enjoy and be proud to own and know that you supported an artist that you believe in. And, you know, you never know. Maybe one day it would be worth a whole lot of money. It's kind of nice when you look at it that way, isn't it? But that's not how the NFT market is being used. Let's get down to the technical stuff. So if the token is digital, how do you know who owns it? The way that's solved is with the blockchain. Okay, so stay with me. We're going to get pretty fancy. If you're a little fuzzy on what the blockchain is, you can check out my episode on blockchain and Bitcoin, which is, I believe, episode 7 in season 1. So if you kind of remember it or you just want the Cliff's Notes version, here we go. Blockchain is basically a list or chain of transactions that prove who owns what. So you look at the entire chain of transactions for a particular item and you can see who owns it by looking at the last transaction on the chain. And the same principle works for cryptocurrency as for NFTs. Whoever bought it last is the one who owns it. But the transactions don't contain people's real names. It's just, you know, identified by a long list of gibberish letters and numbers instead of a name. And while everyone can see the gibberish name and the details of the transaction to some degree, only the person associated with the gibberish name has the decryption key. So that person is the only one who can unlock that item on the blockchain so that it could be sold or given to someone else. If someone else gets a hold of your decryption key, whether by stealing it or tricking you out of it or whatever, they can make a new transaction on your behalf and transfer your stuff to themselves. If they do this, you can see their gibberish name on the new transaction, but that doesn't help you at all. They own your stuff now. And even if you could find their real name, there's no way to prove that you weren't the one to use the key to make that transaction. They had your key, therefore they owned your blockchain transactions and could do whatever they want with them. This is different from the way banks and physical goods and pretty much everything else in the real world operates. Like, suppose someone steals your car and then they get caught, but they try to convince the cops that it's their car. Well, it's easy to figure out who owns it. The cops just look at the title and they see your name right there and bam, they know it's your car. And if you've written a copyrighted song or a book, someone else can't claim to own it. And if you see something fishy on your bank or credit card statement, you can dispute it. But on the blockchain, there is no reverse. If someone gets your key and steals your stuff, there is no way to prove it wasn't you. And even if you could, there's no way to reverse the transaction. Blockchain goes one way and one way only. And there's no way to sue somebody or get the cops involved. I mean, maybe these things will change in the future, but for now, if, you know, you went crying to the cops because someone stole your Care Bears NFT, and there is such a thing as a Care Bears NFT, if somebody stole it, I don't think they're going to be able to help you. This level of anonymity has opened up a whole new world for con artists. While it's virtually impossible to hack the blockchain itself, fraudsters use phishing scams to get people to give them their keys. These scams work a lot like regular phishing scams where you get a fake link to log into your bank account, except with this, the link looks like you're logging into your own blockchain account, but really they are just stealing your key. Then they use the key to transfer ownership of your NFTs or cryptocurrency or whatever's in there to themselves with another blockchain transaction. This is exactly what happened to actor Seth Green when he fell for a phishing scam, and four of his NFTs, including a bored ape, ended up in someone else's possession. He did end up getting the bored ape NFT back, only by buying it back from the person who now had it, and which means he had to pay for it yet again. One of the reasons Seth worked so hard to get his bored ape NFT back was that these particular NFTs are sold with full copyrights. And Seth was developing a TV show using his bored ape NFT. And since we have a situation where whoever possessed the NFT also owned the copyright, then Seth could have maybe been sued by the new NFT owner for using his copyrighted ape in a TV show. I've seen a lot of debate about this online, about whether the new owner could have sued him or whether if the owner tried to sue him, Seth would be able to prove it was stolen, blah, blah, blah. Intellectual property law has not caught up with any of these things yet. And there are countless stories of people's NFTs being stolen the same way, especially people who are new to the game and they don't understand what a huge black market there is. It costs a fraudster like nothing to send out a bunch of emails. And even if they just get a few thousand dollars worth of NFTs, that's free money for them. And it's completely untraceable. I I also did want to mention this other really popular way of stealing people's keys is they hack into your email, and they're not even interested in your email. They don't care about it, but what they're looking for is access into the cloud where your photos might be stored, because a lot of people think they're clever by writing their key on a piece of paper and then taking a photo of it. And then they save the photo on their phone and the photo goes into the cloud and somebody with access to your email has access to all those photos. You would not believe how many people's keys have been stolen this way. Don't do this. Instead, write it on a piece of paper and put it in a book somewhere, but try to remember not to donate the book to the library. Keeping these keys is tough. I won't lie. I think it's got to be really tough. I personally think that NFTs have their place in the digital world, just like paintings and other types of art do in the physical world. I just hope that anyone who invests in NFTs does so with full understanding and knowledge of what they're getting into and how it could all go south. And if you want to see a picture of my crazy cat painting by Joey Mars, you can head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/howhackshappen. I am not selling a photo as an NFT, but you can feel free to look at it as much as you like. This is Michelle Bousquet from How Hacks Happen, hoping to keep you safe. Thank you so much for coming on this little adventure with me. In between making episodes of How Hacks Happen, I wrote a book called The Art and Math of Cryptography. If you're a mathy-ish person who wants to learn more about how cryptography works under the hood, I think you'll like this book. It also makes a great gift for that friend of yours who's obsessed with cybersecurity. You can find The Art and Math of Cryptography at Amazon.com in Kindle, paperback, and hardcover formats.